Good evening, Mr. Ham. How are you doing on this lovely, superb owl Sunday?
Dude, I am great. It's like been forever since we've sat here and done this. I want to say we're knocking on, what, 8 months, 7 months, something like that?
If not a year. Yeah,
it's been a long time. Yeah. It's been a long time. I think back in the summer was the last time we sat. And that was before I even went to Colorado, I think, or maybe right after I came back, something.
No, it was before you went.
Wow.
Because you were talking about going, yeah.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So it's good to see you.
It is. It's excellent to see you, sir. I'm glad we're getting a chance to catch up. Just to keep everybody in the loop, I will take a fair share of the brunt on this one. And I'm just going to be open about it because I think it's something that people should be able to discuss. I've been dealing with some depression.
Yeah.
It's been pretty heavy. I'm starting therapy and I'm on some medication now to help.
Good deal.
And it is helping. But we're still in the beginning stages of all this for my recovery.
Good. I'm glad that you're moving in the right direction on it though.
But yeah, and I think, you know, it's definitely something that I think especially men kind of fall susceptible to, especially as you get older. It's pretty well known that men kind of aren't great at sharing their feelings, and even in society you could say it's kind of looked down upon for a man to discuss their feelings and all that. So it's something that I'm trying to learn to cope with and all that. So, and I know we've had other stuff. You had some trips and some family things and some other things, but a lot of it is just I've been having a hard time even just getting up to do any, like going to work has been difficult.
I understand. So, it seems like, since we've sat down here last, there have been so many changes. Right. I know before I left on the trip, we only had one client in our house. We now have two clients again. I've switched from teaching third grade math and just math and social studies a little bit to teaching fourth grade social studies and writing.
Writing.
That's been a lot of fun. The creative side of it is wonderful. Those kids love it. And we did a unit on poetry back right around Thanksgiving, and they absolutely knocked it out of the park. They wrote some amazing poems. So
nice.
It was really good. There's just been a lot of changes just kind of in the structure of how life looks, you know, all the way around.
You ain't kidding, brother. Speaking of life changes and structures and poetry, our oldest daughter is now 16.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, mine's turned 7.
My gosh. And she had her first actual paying job.
Nice.
And I gotta say, I'm really proud that her first paying job was as a professional actor.
Aha. Yeah.
She was in a local theater company, Flashback Theater Company. She did a play with them that was based off of a novel that was also the basis of an old Alfred Hitchcock film.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Called The 39 Steps.
Cool.
They did it much more of a, comedy than as a suspenseful thing. I mean, Hitchcock, of course.
Yeah.
More towards the suspense, but their adaptation of it was, I would almost want to say kind of this, avant-garde comedy kind of thing, because they did it, the facility where they had it, the stage was very well, there wasn't even a stage, like the performers were just on the floor, and they had a very small area for the performance, so they were very limited and they had to be very creative with their set design and everything.
So where was it held?
Downtown at the Flashback company, where it used to be the old police
building.
Right down there across from the Charred Oak.
Yeah.
Downtown. The set design was very creative, and some of the things in it were just like I said, like, one of the guys was supposed to have a finger missing from one of his hands. So they had this like very obviously fake mannequin hand with a finger cut off of it. And that was his hand. When it came time for him to reveal that he was the bad guy, he pulls out a pistol and it's like a, one of those bubble guns.
Oh yeah.
They're like shoots bubbles, you know? And, some of the set design was just like, it was just very creative. It was hilarious. Like we watched it twice and I was in stitches both times.
So now the same troupe that she's working with, Flashback, right. I went and saw the performance that they did of Sweeney Todd back in the summer. And that thing was phenomenal. Yep. I mean, they were on point with that.
Yes.
Really, really well done.
Yes. They were we actually got invited to the dress rehearsal.
Oh yeah.
Of Sweeney Todd. Cool. And yeah, it was phenomenal.
Yeah. I thought it was fantastic. There was, you know, the for anyone that has not seen Sweeney Todd, there's a really, really, really poignant part where everything that he has worked for kind of comes together and he starts dropping things through floors.
Yes.
And I was waiting for that.
Mm-hmm.
And dude, I was the whole place came alive whenever that happened.
Yes.
It was awesome. Yes. It really was.
And a little behind the scenes on that.
Yeah.
A couple of the actors were actually injured.
I can see that drop mechanism. That's a pretty good drop. I mean, that was a good 8 foot.
Yeah.
So,
well, because it was so narrow.
They were
a
hitting.
Couple of them would get hit on the way down, and a couple of the actors refused to drop.
Really?
Like they were just like, "Yeah, I'm not going to do that."
I mean, I can see it.
One of the things I will pull out from the Sweeney Todd performance, the female lead in that is
she's awesome.
That she is the drama teacher for the high school for Southwestern.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And I don't know if you noticed or not, but a lot of the performers in Sweeney Todd were wearing little lav mics.
Oh, yeah.
She was not mic'd.
Oh, yeah. And she could project her voice.
Her voice is amazing. Like, she can really belt it out.
Yes.
I mean, I was floored. And but anyway, so that has been going on. And for our older daughter's birthday, her 16th birthday, let's just say I've been going through some stuff recently. Stress is through the roof. I can't really talk about details publicly because I can't. We had an issue. Money is a little tight right now. And so I couldn't do like a big, huge thing for the daughter's birthday. I mean, I got her some stuff, but nothing.
Right.
You know, sweet 16. It, you know, we had to.
You had to be a little more frugal. Yeah. Right. There's nothing wrong with that.
She didn't want a big party. She just wanted, you know, a little thing at the house with family, which was good. And we had, you know, we got her the cake she wanted and all that kind of stuff. You know, the best that we could do that she, you know, things that she wanted. But for her literature class, she's in honors English.
Yes.
At the high school. And they had to write a poem.
Oh, yeah.
And the poem she wrote was about dealing with her anxiety. Like, she's in counseling for anxiety. She has.
Right.
Occasionally will have panic attacks.
And it's good to have someone to talk to. So that's a good thing.
Right. And her poem was about the anxiety and about her performance in the play.
Okay.
And trying to deal with those emotions every night before the show.
I know what it's like. That I don't want to even say stage fright, just being in front of people.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't have to be necessarily a stage, but just that being in front of people and performing, that's huge.
Right. Yeah. And so the poem was about that. And, you know, as a 15, 16 year old writing something like that, I found the poem to be very open and honest. And the way she was communicating those ideas, it's something that I don't know that I could do as a 40-year-old person.
Right.
And for her to have that insight and
awesome.
That recognition and being able to put it out there, and then not just being able to put it down, but then being willing to let other people read that.
That's huge.
You know, I thought that was really phenomenal. And so
it really is.
One of the things I did for her birthday was I had that poem. I had her send it to me, like email me the document.
Right.
And I went through and found like a nice font that looked kind of like handwriting. I used Midjourney, you know, one of our little AI tools that we've talked about, to make some artwork.
Yeah.
And so I had it make a comedy and a drama mask.
Oh, nice.
You know, the little smiley and frowny mask that they use. And it was kind of stylized. And so then I brought that into Photoshop, or, well, Affinity Photo, but Photoshop. And I touched it up, kind of laid it out nice, put it on like an 11 by 17 layout, and then had it printed on some like really high quality gloss paper and had it framed.
Nice.
And so, and then part of the gift too was I had her do a scavenger hunt. So I had them print it twice, once on really high quality nice paper and framed it.
Yeah.
And then another one just on like regular plain 11 by 17 paper, and I folded it up and hid it. And so I could make it like really small. And so I tucked that away and hid it. And then she had to do this scavenger hunt all around the house, finding clues.
That's cool.
To find the next, you know, and then eventually she found the present. And as sweet as she is, like this folded up creased thing, you know, it unfolded to like a big 11 by 17.
Right.
But she was just like, you know, it was all folded and creased and wrinkled. And she was just like, oh my gosh, this is so amazing. Thank you so much. And
I'm like, she was pleased with the regular paper one.
Yeah. And okay, well, that is your present, but that's not your actual present. I was like, here. And I gave her like the framed one. And she was just like, oh man, that's amazing.
That's awesome, dude.
So
see, it's gifts like that that really, I mean, that touches someone, because that's personal.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's taking something that they've created and giving that back to them, you know, with a nice bow on it. That's nice.
And I mean, I kind of got the idea from my wife, honestly, because she did something really similar, because, you know, I do hobby photography.
Right.
I wouldn't even say I'm an amateur.
But dude, your photography, it is phenomenal. It's nice.
Thank you. But I've never really thought about it like that. Like I just enjoy it. And so I have fun with it.
But I think that's what comes through, though. The fact that you enjoy it, you can see that.
Okay.
I mean, the quality of the photography, it says this is someone that cares about this, you know?
Well, I appreciate that. And the wife had some of my photos printed out on canvas.
Mm.
And she gave those to me for Christmas one year.
That's nice.
That's kind of where I got the idea from. I was like, because that really meant something to me,
mm-hmm.
you know, that...
Yeah.
That she thought enough of them to have them printed on canvas. And they do look nice.
That's very cool.
But not tooting my own horn, but I never would have thought to like have them. I never even would have thought to have them print it.
Yeah.
Let alone like, you know, print it on like a bigger canvas and hang on the wall.
Seems like print photography is just not a thing we do anymore. And
not
that's
really,
sad.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is sad, because there's so many memories that are out there now that, you know, they're just digitally lost in the ether. I'm sure that there are photographs that I've taken since I've gotten a phone that has a camera on it. And if I were to go back and start looking at the beginning of that, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of just little snips that just kind of fall to the wayside. So,
yeah. And like when you did that thing a couple of years ago where you were doing a picture a day, I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I tried to do it, and I lasted up to, I don't even remember. I can't remember how many I did, but it was nice for a while. I started running out of things to take pictures of. Or I would miss a couple of days, and I'd be like, okay, I need to get caught up, and it just seemed like I never could. So, yeah, that's...
Yeah, and well, that's my two. Is like when I go out, of course, I usually do more landscape. So for me, it's more about the time of year.
Right.
And the conditions.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it has to be the right kind of day. It can't be raining. It can't, you know,
yeah.
It can't be 800 degrees, you know, so it's a lot of little things, but yeah, I have a lot of fun with that.
Seems like I recall we went to, We went down to the golf course that time down at Burnside Island to get those, because you were doing a, what is it, that HDR type thing where you was getting the three different shots where you was getting a like a one that was overexposed, one underexposed, and one that was proper, and you were layering. Right. And I think that was even before you were, I think that was when you were having to do that manually, right? Because I know there's programs that do that now. I've got one on my phone that'll automatically do that, but yeah.
Well, so what I was doing, it's called bracketing photography.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's three physical images. And then the software I had, you had to like bring all three images in.
And would layer them and synchronize them, right?
Yeah. It like lined them up and everything. But yeah, you had to do it. It wasn't just a one click and you had an HDR image.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I remember us doing that afternoon, that evening. Yeah. And that was interesting.
That the same day I did the time lapse?
It was, yeah, there was a time lapse there as well. I think we did it for like what?
I think it was like 40 minutes
or 45 minutes. Yeah. Something. Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty cool. Yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah. I haven't even gotten a camera out in I don't know how long.
Yeah, same. Same. I use my phone if I take pictures now, and I haven't got my SLR, DSLR.
The thing is they've gotten so good. I mean, they really have.
Yeah, especially the new iPhone, the new Max. It's got that periscope camera with the 5x digital or 5x optical zoom in it now.
Yeah.
And that's
the thing. Apple really has, and I, you know me, I'm not an Apple guy. I've never have been, but I really have to say their processing of photography and how they approach like music and media. It's just worlds beyond.
Yeah. And for me, the biggest thing was, especially with the 14 and the 15 iPhones.
Yeah.
They've up to a 48 megapixel.
Oh,
cause they were only a 12 megapixel.
48 megapixel.
Yeah.
Dude, I can remember whenever that came out, the whole megapixel thing.
Right.
And I remember it was like, it used to be like 320 pixels.
Yeah.
Not mega, just pixels.
Yeah.
And now it blows my mind that resolution is that high.
Samsung's been that for years.
Yeah.
And
I don't even know what my resolution is on my phone.
It's Samsung, right?
It's the 23 plus, right? So
it's probably 48.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But that was the thing for years is Apple was still using a 12 megapixel sensor, and but they were doing all of their stuff computationally, where a lot of the Android phones had upped the sensor size, and
way their processing side could be a little softer.
Right.
Yeah.
And Apple finally, with the 14 Pro and the 15 Pro, has upped to that higher sensor.
Yeah.
And they're still doing the computational. I mean, everybody does computational photography
right
now.
Right.
But the biggest thing for me, and the reason I got the 15 Pro Max, because I don't really like the big size physical phone.
Yeah.
Like, I prefer to have a smaller phone, but the Pro Max has the ability to shoot AR video.
Oh, yeah.
Or VR, whatever you want to call it, three-dimensional video. The phone can shoot those videos.
So I guess with the camera cluster on the back, it uses
two lenses.
So you can get create a stereo
effect.
Nice.
And then it computationally makes the 3D image. And the thing is, I know it's not a thing right now, but you've got the Apple Vision Pro that just came out and the Quest and all these 3D headsets. And I think eventually those are going to turn into just like prescription spectacles.
I would see that. I can see that happening.
Like eventually it's not going to be what everybody's calling it right now is a nerd helmet.
Yeah, it's not going to be. It's going to be kind of like the Google glasses that they had years ago.
Even smaller.
But like, yeah, I'm saying smaller than that.
Even literally, you will not be able to visibly distinguish them from prescription glasses.
Right.
And I think when they get to that point, the ability to kick on and watch like a 3D video of your kids playing or graduation, or it's going to be amazing. And I wanted to go ahead and get that so I could shoot that and play with it.
That way you've got it for years to come.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
That's not a bad idea.
And I think that could be the next big
arena. I can see that.
When the other technology catches up, like when the playback technology catches up to where it's not a big, huge thing on your face, it's just like a pair of glasses. I think that's going to be,
I think
that's going to be the game changer.
Because as it stands, like you say, the big Oculus types headsets and the things like that, of course, I can see that would definitely be a game changer for Apple if they were able to get them that small and, like you say,
right. And they are. I mean, I think they bought part of Zeiss,
or
one of those big companies that does
the lenses. Yeah,
optics. Yep. And I think that's kind of where they're working on.
Carl Zeiss lenses, man, I haven't heard that in forever.
So if you buy, if you buy a Vision Pro,
yeah,
and you require corrective lenses,
yeah,
you actually have to buy a special inset that snaps into the headset that has
your prescription,
specific prescription.
Yep. Dude, that's cool,
and that's part of it too. They grind the lenses themselves.
That is for that. Very cool.
So yeah. And you have to, and it, of course, it's Apple. So it's like $250 to get your prescription lenses.
I want to say, it was on NPR the other day. They were talking about this. I think it was on Science Friday or the Tech Talk or something like that they were doing. And they were talking about the price.
Yeah, it's $3,500 base price.
Yeah. They were like, this is obviously not for the, you know, average user, but eventually it will be. And, they were talking about how Apple really doesn't necessarily jump into a market to be a leader. What they do is they kind of let everyone else do their thing, and then they go, oh, these are all great ideas, and they lump everything that's good together and go, here, let's give you the product now that sets the standard.
Yeah.
Well, and they're really good at that.
Yeah. Historically, what Apple has excelled at as a company is coming into an existing market and elevating it.
Yeah.
And that's they have not been the pioneer company.
Right.
They've always been the company that comes in, like MP3 players have been around for years.
Yep.
And then Apple's like, check out the iPod.
Right. It's just a game changer. Levels up.
And their thing with it was they bundled it with iTunes.
Right. So you get the actual device itself that is user friendly, but you get a platform.
You get a platform where you can buy a song at a time.
Yeah,
you don't have to buy an entire album anymore.
Yeah,
now you can just buy the one hit song that the band has,
and move on.
It was that whole package.
Yeah,
that was their innovation, and that's what they excel at.
Yeah, yeah, and that's kind of what they were touching on NPR.
Yeah.
They were saying that it was like the industry. They redesign the industry not by innovation, but by just taking things and making them better.
Right.
Yeah. That's good. Apple is really good at that. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So, there's been, like you said, a lot that's happened between since we've sat down and now. So, over this past 6 or 7 months, aside from is there anything big other than... last time we sat down, I was heading toward Colorado, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So that trip was amazing.
Nice.
We went to the beach after that. I don't even know what's happened since then. School started and all of that.
Right.
We've had Christmas and Thanksgiving and Halloween, and we've missed a bunch. So to our listeners out there, happy all of those holidays that we missed.
Yeah. Happy New Year, happy Christmas, happy Thanksgiving.
And we're glad that you're back to listening to our lovely voices here.
Indeed.
And do we have anything that we want to talk about much today? Other than just kind of catching up?
Yeah, there's a little thing. I think we had kind of teased it before, and it's something. You know, from time to time here, we like to go in to do these like conspiracy theory type of deals. And this one's not so much a conspiracy theory as an historical mystery.
Right. Right.
Which I think is it's an interesting thing. And I heard this new theory to explain this historical mystery.
Oh, really?
That's what I was wanting to discuss, because I thought it was a really interesting take on the phenomenon, I guess would be the best way to describe it.
Yeah. So let's talk about what the phenomena is first.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. So you go right ahead, because you can introduce this better than I can. Because like I said, I've not done a whole lot of research on this, simply just kind of reading over it. But it's something that when I saw it immediately, I was like, oh yeah, I've seen this in the past.
Right.
So I was somewhat familiar, but not necessarily enough to know, you know, gotcha. Enough to talk about it, yeah. I should say.
So, it's a very historical event, and you've probably seen photographs of it in history texts.
Yeah.
Just to set the scene a little bit, this occurred in June. Late June of 1908. So we're talking about 120 years ago almost.
Yeah.
And it occurred in the remote areas of the Russian wilderness known as Siberia.
Yep. East Siberia, the taiga area.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like the plains kind of.
Yeah.
It happened really early in the morning, about 7 a.m. residents all around Russia saw what they described as a very bright light.
I was going to say, I can read one of their eyewitness accounts if you'd like to.
Yeah, go ahead. It
says, at breakfast time, I was sitting by the house at Venera Trading Post, approximately 40 miles south. Facing north, I suddenly saw that direction to the north over Angukul's Tunguska Road. The sky split in two, and fire appeared high and wide over the forest. The split in the sky grew larger, and the entire northern side was covered with fire. At that moment, I became so hot that I couldn't bear it, as if my shirt was on fire from the northern side where the fire was. There came a strong heat. I wanted to tear off my shirt and throw it down, but then the sky shut close, and then there was a strong thumping sound, and I was thrown a few meters. I lost my senses for a moment, but then my wife ran out and led me to the house. After that, such noise came as if rocks were falling or cannons were firing. The earth shook, and when I was on the ground, I pressed my head down, fearing rocks would smash it. When the sky opened up, hot wind raced between the houses like from cannons, which left traces in the ground like pathways, and it damaged crops. Later, we saw that many windows were shattered, and in the barn, a part of the iron lock had snapped.
Right.
This is the testimony of a tribal man that was recorded. His name, I.M. Suslov was the name that they gave for this one.
Wow. Cool. So, yeah, but this was noticed all around Eastern Russia. People saw this bright light in the sky like a second sun. And they noticed that as they watched it, it grew into a giant fire that started to trail this blue and white light behind it like a tail. And ultimately, there was a huge, gigantic explosion that flattened nearly 800 square miles of forest in a concentric circle. So like from one central point in a circle outwards, everything was flattened away from that one point. Like all the... Like all the trees are felled away from that central point.
Yeah, it's literally like something has exploded in one spot and everything fanned out from that one point.
Right.
And the estimation is somewhere around 80 million trees.
Right, yeah, it's a huge forest.
Yeah, yeah. Over an area of 830 square miles.
Yeah.
That's insanely huge.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Huge.
This is... still to date, the largest impact event in recorded history.
Yep.
The original assumptions by people were that an asteroid had struck.
Yep.
But there's a problem with that theory.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. In that they scoured the countryside.
And could find no meteor fragments anywhere.
They found no fragments of meteor or asteroid material. There was no impact crater. To be the size that it was, the object to create the amount of devastation, which was equivalent to a couple
It's 3 to 5 megaton.
Yeah, it's equivalent to a couple of atomic bombs.
Right.
Going off. So to create that amount of devastation, an asteroid would have had to have been nearly 120 feet in diameter.
Yeah, this thing, they estimated it, according to this site, 160 to 200 feet wide at its widest point, though it may have not as been as thick, but right. 160 to 200 feet wide. Which is a stony asteroid that exploded. Now, and they're saying that on this, that they don't think it actually made contact.
Well, yeah.
Necessarily. That right. It was...
So if... Well, yeah. So what? So if it had been an impact, right, there would have to be a crater. And an object of that size, 120 feet, 160 feet, that's a 12 to 16 story building.
Right.
If you want to picture that in your mind, that's about how large this object would have been that
Think
fell
of
from the sky.
Keene Hall in Richmond, if you're familiar with Eastern Kentucky University,
right.
That building falling from the sky at an estimated 60,000 miles per hour.
Right. And so in typical, your impact crater for an object of that size would have been about 3/4 of a mile long.
Right.
The trench dug into the ground and then your big crater.
Right.
There was no crater.
Right.
But also, as well as not having an impact crater, there were never able to find any remnants of the asteroid itself. Because what is believed to have happened, since there is no impact crater,
okay,
what scientists fell back to, okay, there's no impact crater. So what had to have happened was the asteroid became superheated in the atmosphere.
Yes.
And detonated before impacting the ground.
That's what they're saying here. The explosion is generally attributed to a meteor airburst, the atmospheric explosion of a stony asteroid. The asteroid approached from the east-southeast, probably with a relatively high speed of about 27 kilometers a second, 60,000 miles per hour. It is classified as an impact event, though it never actually touched the ground.
Right. But here's the problem with that. There would still be...
Fragments.
Fragments,
there
right?
There should be pieces, yes.
Right, but they never found anything. Like, they scoured for years.
I mean, they're still...
Yeah, and they've never found anything.
Right. So that is something that kind of makes me go,
And okay. Also, another thing is a lot of the eyewitness testimony claims to have seen a blue and white light.
And that's not typical of a meteor. You would see more of a reddish yellow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
If not just white from the burn up.
Right. So that's atypical as well.
Right.
So there is a new theory out there.
I am curious to know what this is.
And so this one really caught my eye, and it really caught my imagination. So I just want to tell you what the theory is, and then we'll talk about it.
Okay, that sounds great.
What would you say if I told you that it is theoretically possible that the Earth in 1908 collided with a black hole?
I wouldn't be that far. Okay, so I wouldn't be, it would not take as much to convince me of that as it used to. And I'll tell you why. So we've been doing this podcast now for what, 3.5-4 years,
yeah.
Somewhere around that neck of the woods, right?
Yeah.
In that 3.5 to 4 years, we have done a lot of research on conspiracy theories. I've watched more Joe Rogan than I ever wanted to in my life.
Right.
So in all of that, it honestly makes me question some of the things that I think to be true and that I think I know. I really have to start questioning. And okay. I don't want to say that I'm going to jump out there on the conspiracy theory wagon, but there's so many things that seem to pile up at this point that I feel like there has been some event at some point that has altered where we are.
Okay.
In the space-time continuum, if you want to say that.
I got you. Okay. So, first off,
whether or not that's the event that done it, I don't know. But
here's for me, okay? When I first heard this, I'm like, there is no way. A black hole I mean, if we think about
us in, right?
A black hole, right? What is it? It's a star that has collapsed in on itself.
Ultra dense.
Super dense matter, and it absorbs everything and emits very, very little. Hawking radiation is like the only thing known to come out, and it comes out in very trivial amounts.
Right, and it spirals and does weird things and makes odd noises and just all kinds of weird
stuff. But it sucks in everything. Like, nothing can get out of a black hole.
Right, including light.
Right. Even light can't get out of a black hole. And if you get too close to a black hole and you hit the event horizon, you start becoming what they call spaghettified.
Right. You stretch out into this string of molecules.
Infinity.
Yeah. Until there's nothing left of you except for molecules in a giant string.
Right. And I think if that had happened,
I would have noticed it.
We probably would have noticed that, right?
If that theory is correct.
So... Not that kind of black hole.
Okay.
It's a different kind of black hole.
Okay. So what kind of a black hole are we talking about?
So this is a black hole from the Big Bang. Okay. So at the beginning.
So this is a creation event?
Kind of.
Okay.
Yes. So at the very beginning of everything.
Yeah.
Everything was packed into like one atom.
Correct. Right. And then it explodes into...
And then it explodes. So at the very, very beginning, gravity had everything sucked down into this one tiny little thing. And then it just exploded.
And it's been expanding ever since.
Okay. And that was the Big Bang Theory. And that's what created the universe, right? That's the theory. Now, at that explosion, gravity went, hey, I had all that stuff.
So it wants to keep
something. And it starts trying to... pull it all back in, right? I mean, that's gravity pulls everything, right?
Right.
And the explosion was so energetic and so massive that gravity couldn't pull everything back in. Like, it was just the explosion was too big, and gravity pulled back in some of it.
Okay.
And that created the black holes, and that's gravity trying to suck everything back into that one.
So we're seeing like super concentrated points of gravity effectively in these black holes.
And eventually, okay, a black hole, like as we've understood it, just sucks in. Like it only emits.
Where's the other end? Where's the other side?
Well, okay.
Right?
Nobody knows. We can't observe them. We can't go into them. We have no idea. But the black hole consumes.
Right.
But Hawking has studied, and Hawking radiation, like energy does come back out. So if a black hole is floating through the emptiness of space, there's nothing for it to consume, but it's slowly releasing this Hawking energy.
Okay.
It's going to slowly lose mass. Like, slowly.
So we're saying that possibly one of these black holes had lost enough of its mass?
So what we're talking about, and what these are these theoretical objects, how they're referred to is primordial black holes.
Okay.
Because they are from the very beginning of the universe.
I understand.
And they've been losing mass this entire time because there's nothing, they've been
however
floating.
However many billions of years that the universe has existed, this thing has been leaking.
Right. It's been floating through empty space with nothing to absorb. So just it's just leak. Losing.
So, yeah. So basically, eventually, it's like a balloon that's losing air. Eventually, it goes down to a point to where it's a manageable or non-existent thing.
So in, you know, theoretically, crunching the numbers on this, these smarty smart guys, these physicists, ladies, whatever, they have crunched up these numbers and, you know, it could, we're talking about a black hole down to like the size of a hydrogen atom.
So just one possibly cause that kind of
it's like this, you know, it's a black hole, but it's the size of a hydrogen atom.
Okay.
But you know, what do we know about black holes? They're these huge gravity sinks, right? Like just packed. So they are incredibly, incredibly dense.
Okay.
So if they, from what they can understand with the math available today, if they calculate the density of a black hole that has the size of a hydrogen atom, it would have the same mass as an asteroid that's approximately 120 to 160 feet in diameter.
That seems to line up.
Now, what else do we know about black holes? Well, they suck everything in, right?
Right.
Okay, so if this primordial black hole came into Earth's atmosphere, it's going to start sucking in energy and mass and matter into it. That creates a tremendous amount of heat.
Right.
All that energy being expended, I mean, just sucking it in.
That's what happens when you have any kind of an explosion or anything. It's right. A release of energy, and the opposite of that is, yeah.
Right. So exactly. you got all this helium and hydrogen and atmosphere material just getting sucked into this black hole, and it's creating this immense amount of heat, and that gravitational bending could also distort the light, which is typically seen as bluish white light.
Ha ha. Wow.
And this hydrogen sized atom, even though it has the mass of a big asteroid, it's physically the size of an atom.
Right. Just that it's super dense.
It's super dense and it has a lot of gravity. Now, here's the thing. It still would have created an impact crater. But unlike an asteroid,
what could you find? What would be left?
Well, it has no physical presence.
Right.
Right. So it would just pass clean through the Earth.
Okay.
And depending on the impact, you know, depending on the, if it was a straight shot across the, you know, largest portion of the Earth, it would have came out somewhere in Chile. But depending on the angle, I mean, your chances are pretty good that it's going to pop out in the middle of the ocean somewhere on the other side.
Okay.
Because, I mean, if you skew just a little bit east-west, you miss South America and you just pop out in the Atlantic or the Pacific Ocean.
You're right. Absolutely.
So the chances, you know, the theory is that it was probably at a slight angle and just popped out somewhere in the middle of the Pacific Ocean on the other side, where nobody would have ever seen it in 1908.
Right.
We didn't have the scientific material to witness that.
But now, okay, so here, okay, look, can I ask this question? Because this seems to be the elephant in the room.
Sure.
Okay. So let's say that we come in contact with this hydrogen molecule sized black hole.
Right.
Now this thing no longer is just floating around with nothing to eat, nothing to absorb, nothing to pull. Once it comes into contact with us, now there's a massive amount of energy that it can start to suck back in. And I would think that even something as small as that, we would see more evidence of its pull than what we're seeing in just this blast.
Well, I mean, now keep in mind, it was moving at 20,000 miles an hour.
This is true, but still.
So it would have just shot straight through the planet like a bullet.
But,
and blew out the other side and kept going. I mean, it would have sucked in some of the matter of the Earth, but I mean, to a black hole, a very insignificant amount of energy.
And realistically, the amount of time it would take for it to pass through at 50,000 miles or 60,000 miles
whatever,
per hour.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're talking, instantaneous almost.
Right.
Yeah. We're, you know, hundredths of a second.
Right. And now what the people were seeing was just all that matter being sucked towards it as it just followed it through.
And then on the other side, there would be the same thing, but it would have been possibly underwater.
Well, they said on the other side, what it would have looked like would have been a falling star going in reverse.
Right. It
would have looked like a falling star shooting out of the ground up to the sky.
Right. That's interesting.
If anybody had been there to see it. But some of the cool things, now this black hole passing through the Earth would have caused earthquakes,
right?
It would have affected the gravitational.
I was going to say, and there's all kinds of stuff that it should have done, right?
But it would have been so minor that people would have just been like, oh, what?
Okay. So wait, now here though, because it talks about on here, on this side, I don't know exactly where I had it pulled up here just a second ago, but it says that there were, seismic activity that was
Yeah.
That was detected in like Germany and as far away as Germany. So that being said, then that's a possibility as well.
Right. But I'm just saying, like, it would have been so minor that people wouldn't have been like, oh, God, an earthquake. Like, they would have just been like, did you feel that?
Yeah.
And it would have been nothing.
Yes, that and it's done.
Yeah. But I just thought it was incredibly interesting to think that the Earth, man, and there would have been an impact crater. But the amount of energy and the velocity and all of that in this, like, it would have basically left behind any matter that it had become, it would have just turned to glass.
Yeah, I can see that, because it would be superheated and everything.
And,
yeah.
And the size of the impact crater would have been much smaller, because there's no physical impact.
Right.
It was just the energy punching through. And so
it's effectively like force in Dungeons and Dragons.
Pretty much, yeah.
And, force damage.
And so, but when they were looking for this impact crater, they would have been looking for like this giant, like.
Yeah, they're looking for a hole.
Right.
Like this thing is more like the size of a pencil.
Yeah, it would, I don't know how big around. They did say, but I forgot to take the notes for that. But it was very small.
Right.
Like, I mean, you would have had to really, really, really get lucky to walk through 800 square miles of forest and find this little.
Yeah, the softball size hole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't have been a hole.
Right.
It would have been a solid chunk of
glass,
basically.
And just a core all the way. Now, that's what they should be looking for then. They should be looking for that glass column that runs from one side of the earth to the other. And then they can prove this garbage.
but I don't know. I just heard that the other day on a podcast. Well, almost a year ago now. But
no, that's very interesting.
But, I mean, you know, the Tunguska event is very famous. Like,
yes, and that is what we're actually talking about. I don't think we even mentioned the name of it up until this point. But, the Tunguska event of Russia in 1908 that leveled all the trees and left this area that was just pretty much completely devastated. It destroyed everything. It estimatedly killed three people. They don't have that confirmed, but the estimate is it killed three people.
800, but I mean, for 800 square mile blast radius, three deaths is extremely minimal.
But and it's because of where it was at. I mean, you were talking Siberia, right?
Right. Very remote area.
Very. I mean, yeah. This is where they're still digging out woolly mammoths. You know, that are frozen in the ice. So. The fact that there's not a lot of people up there is not a surprise, but still, that's crazy, 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 crazy. But no, a few years ago, if you would have told me this, I'd have been like, yeah, that's bull. But today, there's been enough that's odd things that have surfaced and come up that I've been like, you know what? There's got to be something to some of this. I don't know. I don't want to throw any of my conspiracy theories out there, because I don't want to get somebody started on a bunch of stuff. But I'm just saying, there's some strange things that have happened in this world, and I'm kind of going at this point. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's a little. I don't know. I just like I said, it's new theoretical.
Yeah. The thing too that I saw here was that there is another event that happened a few years after that was similar, happened in the same relatively the same area. It was also in Russia. It's in the Ural district of Russia. This thing exploded. It was a meteoroid determined to have been about 55 to 66 feet across. Had an estimated initial mass of 11,000 tons. Says it exploded with the energy of 500 kilotons in an air blast. And the air burst inflicted 1,200 injuries, mainly from broken glass from falling windows and shattered by the shockwave. And this happened over a more populated area on the 15th of February. Oh, I'm sorry. This was in 2013. Okay. So this was not just a few years later. This was just a few years ago.
15 years ago.
Yeah, 15 years ago. So,
or no, God, my math. 10 years ago.
10 years ago. 10, 11. Yeah. Gosh. So, yeah, this smaller airburst occurred over a populated area on the 15th of February. If I'm not mistaken, this is the one I've seen video footage of, like dash cams and stuff. You can see the streak kind of off to the right-hand side in a lot of them. And whenever it bursts, like, car windows break, like the windshields will crack, or and you can see like windows burst out of buildings and stuff. So it's pretty interesting though. It's crazy, some of the stuff that's out there,
right?
And this is one of those, like I said, I've seen the pictures and I had never really dove into it, so I'm glad that you decided to. This is interesting.
Okay, so just as a little funny extra here, you know, because I talked about Midjourney earlier.
Right.
So I asked GPT, I asked ChatGPT to write me a funny story to explain how aliens caused the Tunguska event.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
So are you ready?
I can't wait for this. Yes.
All right. Once upon a time, in a faraway galaxy, there was a mischievous group of aliens known as the Zoglocks.
Zoglocks.
Mm-hmm. Nice. These aliens love to explore different planets and play pranks on unsuspecting beings. One day, they stumbled upon a planet called Earth and decided it would be the next perfect place for their next practical joke. The Zoglocks had a special device called the Cosmic Giggle Generator.
The Cosmic Giggle Generator.
That could create hilarious and unexpected events. They decided to use it to cause chaos and confusion on Earth. After scanning the planet, they found a remote and uninhabited area called Tunguska in Siberia, Russia, which seemed like the perfect spot for their prank. On the morning of June 30th, 1908, the Zoglocks activated the Cosmic Giggle Generator, which created a small portal between their spaceship and Earth. Through this portal, they sent a gigantic rubber chicken, complete with a comical expression on its face, hurtling towards the Tunguska region. As the rubber chicken descended from the sky, it grew larger and larger until it was the size of a massive meteor. The Zoglocks watched from their spaceship, giggling uncontrollably as the rubber chicken crashed into Earth's atmosphere, causing a blinding flash of light and a tremendous explosion. The impact of the rubber chicken was so powerful that it flattened trees, shattered windows, and sent shockwaves across the entire region. The Zoglocks had successfully created one of the most mysterious and destructive events in history, the Tunguska event. As the dust settled, the Zoglocks couldn't contain their laughter. They watched as humans scratched their heads, trying to make sense of what had just happened. Scientists and researchers were baffled, coming up with various theories to explain the mysterious explosion. Little did they know that it was all a prank orchestrated by the mischievous aliens. The Zoglocks quickly retreated to their spaceship, leaving no trace of their presence behind. To this day, the true cause of the Tunguska event remains a mystery to humans. Some believe it was a meteor, while others speculate about a black hole or even a secret weapon experiment gone wrong. But only the Zoglocks know the hilarious truth, that it was all just a cosmic joke, courtesy of one gigantic rubber chicken. And so the Zoglocks continue their intergalactic adventures, leaving laughter and confusion in their wake. Who knows where they will strike next, but one thing is for sure, they will always find a way to keep the universe entertained with their extraterrestrial pranks.
That is pretty good, I gotta say.
And that was my only prompt. Write a funny story about how aliens caused the Tunguska event, and it even mentioned the meteor and the black holes.
So that is pretty good, dude. AI is getting much better. I got something here that I thought was interesting, but I'll say that I'll put it out there because we have coming up. I think it is, what, March 22nd? The new Ghostbusters is coming out.
Oh, I had no idea, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a new Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire, I think is what it's called. And in it, there's the ghost is released out of this ancient, like, relic, this orb type thing
Now, is this like a continuation of the one with like Finn Wolfhard and
yes,
all that?
Okay. Yes, and it's got all of the, like, you know, all the original guys are back in it. And it's actually set in New York this time. So they're all there.
Okay.
And so the thing is, the main ghost in this one, he freezes things. And basically the last Ice Age was because of this ghost. And they're like, so you literally can be scared to death by this guy. He freezes your blood and freezes your bones immediately. And they're like, yeah, he can literally scare you to death. So the thing is, though, in the last one, Afterlife, which was the one that came out a couple of years ago, they gave us this nice little glimpse into the world of Evo Shandor, which was the main bad guy in it, right? The guy that's kind of bringing back Gozer, the Gozerian, and, you know,
right. Zul. Yeah, I was going to say, that was from the first Ghostbusters movie.
Yeah,
right?
So he's in, and he's in Afterlife as well. So they go, have you seen Afterlife? You've seen it? Yeah,
yeah, that's okay. The one where Egon...
Yeah.
They go to like Egon's farm, like the dirt farmer.
So if you recall, they're in this town and it's a mining town effectively. They have this big mountain where they go and they mine, and they've got a temple of, you know, Gozer inside it. Right. But on the temple, they have all these dates of events that happen. And these are the major paranormal events that happen in the Ghostbusters world. The first one is in 1883. It's the eruption of Krakatoa. Okay. The second one is the 1908 Tunguska event. So that was that. And then 1945 World War II events, the Holocaust, and then the Manhattan cross rip, which was 1984, the original Ghostbusters, and then they have this new one, 2021 Gozer's Return in Somerville. So I thought that was neat, though, that they had the 1908 Tunguska event on Ghostbusters.
I did not catch that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Very good. Yeah.
I guess I'm a Ghostbusters nerd.
That's okay, man. I liked the Afterlife. I thought it was really good.
I thought it paid homage, and that was really nice. And this new one, if you've not seen the preview for it, Melnitz in uniform, dude. She's got the pack on.
Ooh, nice.
Yep. And I mean, there's a lot of canon in it, so it's nice. It's going to be good.
Very good. Very good. Well, I have to keep an eye out for that. Hopefully it comes out on streaming pretty soon, because I just don't do theaters anymore.
Yeah. This one I'll go. I don't do, like, I think we've done Ghostbusters and Dungeons and Dragons. That's the only two movies I've seen that's come out in theaters. And
the last movie I saw in theaters was when a friend of our daughter rented out the theater and we went and watched the Super Mario movie.
Oh, what did you think? It's okay, wasn't it?
Yeah. I thought it was pretty good. I mean, Mario, I guess I can understand the studio making them attach a big name to it.
Yeah.
But when they had the guy that voices Mario in the movie to voice his dad.
Yeah.
But not to voice Mario. I mean, like, it's like, really? Like, he is Mario.
He is that guy.
Like, and you've got him in the film. Like, he should have just done Mario.
Just let him do the voice.
I didn't really have a problem with Chris Pratt.
The one that concerned me was Jack Black. I love some of what he does, but he's just too much. He's just really intense.
Yeah, I will say I was really impressed with Charlie. What's his name? That was Luigi.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I really liked him as Luigi.
Luigi. I mean, that character was good. I don't know who it was. I can't remember. I don't know. Now, Toad was awesome in it.
Maybe it was Toad, yeah.
Yeah. I really liked whoever did his voice. I don't know who it was, but yeah. But yeah, interesting. I liked this one, dude. This is Tunguska is an interesting thing. I'm going to have to kind of dig into that a little more.
Yeah. It's just one of those things, like, it's happened. Like, there's no question that it happened.
No, it's a historical event. It did happen.
And that's one of the things I enjoy about this kind of stuff is, like, it really did happen. We know it happened. Just nobody really knows why it
happened. Right.
And, yeah, I did see some theories talking about the weapon experiment.
Right.
Which I guess is possible, but I really like the black hole. Cause when they said that, I'm like, if we hit a black, the first thing when they said that, I was like, there's this, if we hit a black hole, we wouldn't exist anymore.
So see, that's my thing with, okay.
So that's where I got like.
So I don't want to necessarily dive down that hole, but I'm just going to say this. All right. So this whole CERN thing with all of that, you know how I feel about this, right? You've heard me say this.
Right.
There's the thing is I can't. The only thing that really makes me think that there's something to, and I don't think that anybody's got it pegged. I don't think anybody's got it, you know, saying this is what it is and for sure. But there is a marked difference between 2009, what happened before, and what happened after. That's kind of when we start seeing all the Mandela effect stuff start to happen. And I don't know if it's just because I'm getting older and I'm forgetting things. It could be. I mean, I'm my mid-40s now. I'm closer to 50 than I am 40. But still, there's some weird stuff. Weird stuff that's out there. And we never really knew what was going to happen whenever we, you know, hit those first few molecules together and watched them explode.
Well, you know, they want to build a bigger one now.
Which is a scary thought. If we're ripping little tiny holes in the space-time continuum with all of this, because we don't know what's happening after the explosion. We see the effect immediately, but what is the residue? Where, you know, because we know for a fact energy cannot be created. It cannot be destroyed. It just changes form, right? Yeah. That's all it does. So if we're changing the form of energy and we don't know what's happening to it after that initial explosion, there's an issue.
Well, you know, they did some calculations.
Yeah.
And as we understand it, and I forget the exact numbers, I'm probably off, but I won't give a number. As we understand it, given the size of the universe.
Yes.
And what we know about matter. What we understand about matter and physicalness only like you know, atoms and molecules and
accounts
hydrogen,
for like less than 1% of what's out there, right?
It's a very small percent. Now, I think it's like 15% or something like that, but it's small percentage of the mass of the universe,
right?
Like,
there's vast amount out there that we don't know.
Yeah, the majority of whatever makes up the universe, we don't know what it is.
That's true. Because, I mean, you were talking Big Bang a little while ago. Yes, everything was down in this nice little, you know, compact before it explodes. But what was it setting in? What was around that molecule that it's expanding through now? You know?
Right, exactly. But it's stuff like that that, like, when you get into theoretical physics, it starts.
It gets crazy.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah. But yeah. I've had that's been on my mind for a while. I wanted to, because I just thought it was fun.
Yeah. I mean, that's.
I mean, maybe I'm weird. But.
No, that's definitely some cool stuff. I mean, I got to say, I that's not something that I would necessarily go and dive into myself. But I'm glad that you did, because. I've thoroughly enjoyed like seeing and hearing about this stuff and reading up on some of it. It's been really awesome.
Oh, well, thanks. And I think that's going to have to do it for us.
I mean,
we got to ease back into this thing.
So. That's right. Absolutely.
Thank you for letting me come over and you sitting down to record with me.
I love it when you come over. What are you talking about?
Here in our lovely Two Minds podcast studios.
You know, it's been a minute, though.
It has. It's
been
too long.
We have not been in here for a while.
It's been too long.
It has. So let's do this again a little more frequently, hopefully.
I hope so.
I certainly hope so.
I hope I can get myself to a better place so that we can.
I just hope that we can find some time, too.
That's part of it, too. But, I mean, a big part of it is just I haven't been able to motivate myself.
Yeah.
So.
I understand. And for me, it's been a huge time crunch because it seems like... It seems like once school starts, it's almost all consuming for at least until Christmas. And then after that, normally it slows down a little bit. January was a little bit nuts with the snow that we had and all that kind of stuff. But for the most part, it's started to slow back down now. So I'm actually getting a few minutes of breathing time. So
good.
Yeah. So if you'd like to find us, you know, out there, we're on Facebook, www.facebook.com/groups/2mindspodcast.
Yeah. If you want to provide us with some feedback or information, you can shoot us an email. And that email address is 2mindspodcast, all spelled out, at gmail.com.
Yep. We are on the X still, I think, right? It used to be formerly Twitter.
Yeah.
At Two Minds Podcast, if you want to shoot us a tweet. But we also still have the Mastodon account as well. mstdn.party/@Two Minds Podcast.
Right. And that, honestly, I prefer that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm not a fan of the hate machine that is Twitter now.
Well, I'm part of a grant right now with school, and they will give us, they have incentives for us to tweet or, you know, X. And every time that they ask, well, have you tweeted? I'm like, I don't tweet. I don't do that. I don't even have it downloaded on my phone.
Right.
I'll look at it occasionally online if I'm looking at our thing, but that's about it. And there's our host site, and that is twominds.podbean.com.
Right.
And, of course, there's the mirror sites.
Yeah. You can find us anywhere you find podcasts, pretty much. We're in Spotify, Apple Podcasts.
Yep.
Spotify, basically anywhere you can find podcasts, you can find us there, or in your favorite podcast app. We have the RSS feed link. You can go straight from our host site and just subscribe directly in your favorite podcast client.
Yep. And if you're searching for us on one of those mirror sites, either look up Jason Claywell, Jeremy Hamm, or Two Minds Podcast. That should get you close to us.
Yep. And you should find us. And thank you all so much for all the support and patience with us.
Hopefully we'll be talking to you again soon.
Okay.